There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Bonnell, and I'm your host. On today's program, Voices of America. Not the information service of the United States government, but people listening, remixing, and reorienting the voice of America. I'll be speaking with Sarah Knaus, who's an artist behind the creation of this project. Do stay tuned. My friend Sarah Knaus is an interdisciplinary artist, and now she is an assistant professor of intermedia at the School of Art and Art History at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. And Sarah and I met quite a few years ago, back in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. That's the town where the Media Geek radio show got started, and that's where Sarah and I both participated in the founding of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. And Sarah's continued to take up this notion of media and participation in pursuing new and exciting art projects. Her most recent one is called Voices of America, not Voice of America. And she tells us more about it.
Voices of America is a participatory internet radio project that we've created an internet application, a custom application that allows people to upload, download, and remix recordings of the Voice of America radio network and other remixes that people have uploaded to the site. So, over time, we're creating sort of a library of people around the world who are talking back to the Voice of America radio network.
Now, Voice of America is something which probably a lot of people have heard of, but otherwise aren't very familiar with. So maybe you can tell us about Voice of America and why you chose that as the source for the material.
Well, the project is timed to coincide with the current election, which is a sort of all about change. Sort of Obama began by positioning himself as a change agent, and as incredible as it might seem, McCain is trying to fashion himself in a similar way. And one of the things that a lot of folks who are sort of skeptical about the possibility of change via electoral politics is the way that the government infrastructures sort of pre-exist and have their own bureaucratic inertia, institutional inertia that survives and is continually sort of rejuvenated by current events. And the Voice of America radio network is one of those things. It was founded in the 1940s and as part of the effort to win hearts and minds for the United States government that was coming out of World War II as the dominant superpower in the world. It expanded throughout the Cold War as a way of challenging the Soviet Union by broadcasting through the Iron Curtain. And then, although that particular rationale for its being diminished over time, September 11th reinvigorated its usefulness to the government, and Farsi, Arabic, and Urdu broadcasting became a really big part of its mission to spread the opinions of the U.S. government and a particular notion of freedom all over the world as a way that sort of explicitly is supposed to justify American foreign policy. Interestingly enough, early on in its history, the Voice of America was recognized by Congress as really being propaganda. In 1947, maybe in 1948, I can't remember offhand, Congress actually passed a law forbidding Voice of America to broadcast over the air to on American soil. So U.S. citizens are usually much more ignorant of this media space than people abroad because of that. You can, however, listen today via the internet streaming and also through shortwave radio.
And so is part of the effort here to make people engage with this propaganda arm of the United States, you know, and especially make Americans sort of listen into it in addition to critiquing it then?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the pieces of the project as it grows is at the culmination, which is going to be the election day, we will actually be broadcasting some of these remixes that have been produced by people around the world in a gallery space in Los Angeles via MicroPower. And part of that gesture is about taking this international response to election coverage on Voice of America Radio and giving it back to the American people in you know, albeit a small symbolic way, to represent that image of the U.S. that is being promulgated in their name abroad, filtered through a set of collective responses, and then given back to an American audience.
And you say being broadcast via MicroPower, so this will be actual MicroPower radio transmitters?
Yeah, we will be doing a super low power broadcast within the gallery space. Part of the gesture is also that taking from what went out over the airwaves, putting it in an online forum, and then putting it back out on the airwaves.
So why did you choose the medium of the remix or this methodology for inspiring people to engage with the Voice of America, singular, the Voice of America, and then to put that into broadcast? What is it about these approaches that that appeal to you or appeal to this to your goals?
Well, for a long time, people have been sort of speaking back to popular culture or official culture by repurposing it. You can think of a lot of hip-hop as part of this. Certain images get out there, certain sound bites get out there, and you take from them what you will and refashion your own message out of them. And that's become a very potent way for a lot of artists to work over the last, you know, 20, 25, even longer time. And with the greater accessibility of digital tools to more and more people, you know, there's a vast sort of fan culture out there that's about changing the storyline, changing the message, making your, refashioning somebody else's words into your own message. And so we wanted to tap into that process as part of this project.
You're sort of working within now a growing area of sonic arts and with other practitioners who sit in that space with remixing or audio collage, but also playing with broadcast, correct?
That's right. I'm collaborating with Leah Zarello, who's an artist and computer programmer who works with the organization Free 103.9, which is a nonprofit based in New York that's really been dedicated to promoting and creating a critical dialogue around a group of artists who are working with the electromagnetic spectrum, really broadly determined. So it's everyone who's doing low-power broadcasts to work with Bluetooth to this kind of project, which is, you know, partly about using the airwaves that are already out there, partly about internet streaming. And so they're really interested in all the ways that communication technologies are being used by artists.
And I think there's an interesting part of choosing the Voice of America because of the connection that maybe a lot of people don't realize with National Public Radio. You know, you may be aware that the president of NPR formally headed up Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, which were the European broadcasting arms of the VOA. And then in the post-Cold War was the person who strategized how to reorient Voice of America and these other propaganda broadcasting arms. And I think it's interesting since NPR is looked to and held up as a very distinguished at this point and well-considered news source in the United States, and yet its chief, its CEO, formerly headed up the propaganda arm of the United States, the Voice of America. Did you have any of that in mind in choosing the Voice of America?
We hadn't been thinking about it on NPR, to be honest. I think that connection is really fascinating and really important. And I think that there are certain stylistic similarities between the two broadcasting services that persist today. And there are some interesting sort of correlations temporally between the sort of the rise of NPR and the VOA sort of declining in significance in the 1970s, and then once again sort of reinvigorating itself. But we weren't specifically commenting on NPR in this particular project. There is another group of people who are transmission artists who are called Neighborhood Public Radio, and their project is very explicitly commentary on NPR, the sort of national project that is NPR has turned into a much more local micro-broadcasting project in Neighborhood Public Radio.
Yeah, I had a chance to meet up with them in New York City in May when they were at the Whitney Biennial, and I had them on the show. It's a cool project, and they were able to relay some anecdotes of when the NPR board showed up to view their exhibit there at the Whitney.
I would have loved to hear that.
Voices of America has also been part of something going on right now in Minneapolis, St. Paul, called the Unconvention. Can you talk a little bit about that collaboration?
Yeah, the Unconvention is a collaboration between a number of individuals and arts organizations in the Twin Cities who wanted to create a nonpartisan response to the sighting of the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota, going on this week. So the group commissioned several specific works of art for this week, for this time, and then sort of became a clearinghouse for artists all over the city, all over the country, who are creating work that take a critical, someone who critiques, not someone who's necessarily just ornery and nasty, I mean, critic, someone who's interested in taking a critical look at not just the Republican convention, but the whole election cycle, election process more generally. So there are literally a dozen, maybe two dozen projects that are loosely affiliated with the Unconvention. Some of them are happening in physical space. Some of them are happening entirely online, such as the Voices of America. I had the good fortune to be up in the Twin Cities last weekend and went to a couple of the kickoff events, which were taking place in PV Plaza in downtown Minneapolis, a couple blocks from some of the hotels where the delegations, in fact, the Illinois delegation was staying. And they were sort of all-night outdoor art installations, screenings, music performances, really presenting the Twin Cities as a place where people are actively involved in the making of their culture and politics, and not merely a backdrop on which this sort of convention happens.
What kind of response did you see from the people of Minneapolis there on the street in downtown?
Well, one of the kickoff events was the Liberty Parade, and it was true to the word of the organizers in being nonpartisan. So the Ron Paul contingent had a strong showing, as did the Twin Cities Art Car group, people who decorate their cars, turn their cars into works of art, and parade around, and groups of hardcore environmental activists. It was really a celebration of free speech in a very, very broad sense. And the biggest cheer came for the final piece in the parade, which was representations of Bush, Cheney, and Condoleezza Rice walking arm in arm in chains down the street. So you got a sense of the spirit of the people of Minneapolis when you would hear the cheers for some floats and fewer for others.
And what kind of interplay was there, if any, with the convention or the conventioneers?
Well, you can spot conventioneers from about 50 feet. they were wearing their credentials around their neck and are usually much better dressed than you are. You could see, and some people were not, the conventioners were not particularly amused by the floats that most delighted the crowd. Let me say that.
And also going on in Minneapolis right now, but certainly this weekend, have also been protests. Some, yeah. I guess, permitted officially and some not. And is there been any interplay with the unconvention? What have you seen? I mean, you know, what is kind of the scene out there?
Well, the unconvention is organized by some very established arts organizations in the Twin Cities, ones which whose benefactors probably also were benefactors of the RNC. And so the unconvention adopted very tactically and I think intentionally a nonpartisan appearance. It's really a platform for other people's speech rather than adopting a stance in and of itself. That said, I think a number of the unconvention forums have been filled with people who are choosing to use art as a way of expressing their dissent with the politics of the Republican Party. At the evening screening on PV Plaza, there was an activist video that was played discussing some of the preemptive raids that had happened a couple of days before in preparation for the RNC. So while the unconvention is recognizes how it's limited by through its positioning in as an arts institution, it's really being a powerful vehicle for some people to speak through. And I unfortunately had to leave before a lot of the larger demonstrations started this week. I had to come back home to Iowa City to teach. But I'm sure that people were attending, moving from one event to another.
What was the mood amongst people participating in the Unconvention Project or people who were or simply viewers or audience members through the various events of at least the weekend you were there?
Well, I think that most of the people I spoke to were frustrated and angry that the convention was taking place in their city and taken aback at how the police were responding in ways very similar to the ways they responded to the RNC in New York 4 years ago, where over 1,000 people were arrested and a number of folks were arrested in a critical mass ride before the RNC even began. There had been, I think, some hope that by not being in New York City, by being in sort of progressive Minnesota, which is a state which hasn't elected a Republican in decades, something would somehow be different. And of course, that's not true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate, especially since people really didn't get a vote as to whether or not the RNC would be in their city.
And a tremendous amount of city resources get spent on this kind of hyperactive policing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tremendous amount. Getting back to Voices of America then, what is your goal? What do you hope to see with this project happen with it and from it?
Well, I would really like to see a group of people around the world start collaborating on making remixes of each other's remixes, sort of building a collective creative response to these broadcasts. When I'm involved in a conceptual art project like this, I don't have explicitly political goals for it. It's sort of a project of cultural politics. It's about changing the way that we inhabit our informational space, changing the way we think about the culture that we receive and the culture that we make. And it's just part of that larger goal.
Can you tell me where people can learn more or actually participate in Voices of America?
Sure. It is online at http.vvoa.net.
And what do people need technically to be able to work with this stuff?
Well, we have a couple links on the site to one, a free audio editing software called Audacity. And the second, one of the second links is sort of a tutorial on how to remix, some ideas, some how-tos. The site does allow you to upload and download both MP3 and uncompressed file formats like WAV and AIF. We currently have an MP3 preview only, so you can only preview the MP3 files, but we're working on a way of expanding that.
And people will be able to do this up through to the election?
Up until the election, yeah. We'll be closing the project on November 4th.
Well, great, Sarah. Thanks for telling me more about this.
Thanks a lot.
That was Sarah Knaus, an interdisciplinary artist and assistant professor of intermedia at the University of Iowa. And she was talking about her new project along with Lee Azzarello called Voices of America. And you can find that at thevoa.net. And Sarah's website is readysubjects.org. And this is Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesenell, and I am your host. And check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net. And the radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. Do stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
We are told that Barack Obama believes too much in an America of high principle and bold endeavor. But when John Kennedy
didn't say,
he didn't say to get there, we shouldn't even try, even try, even try, even try. Our people answered his call and rose to the challenge. And today, an American flag still
caution. A virus has been detected.
That is a piece from Voices of America, uploaded by Carol Bellow, called Found imp.worm.loop.hole. You can find other remixes submitted by folks just like you, or find snippets of audio from the Voice of America that you can remix yourself. It's all there at thevoa.net. As I record this edition of Media Geek, John McCain has just accepted the surprise nomination of his party to run for president on the Republican ticket. But outside the convention arena, protests have been going on all across the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, Minnesota. And there's also been a very strong police reaction to these protests, with a lot of very violent tactics. Over 300 people have been arrested. Houses have been raided, many in what appear to be preemptive actions happening over the weekend before the conference happened, including the recent raiding of a video collective house. And in that, journalists, independent journalists and mainstream media corporate journalists have been arrested and have been harassed and have found themselves tear gassed or taken to jail. Anyone who's been probably watching independent media at all or paying any attention to any independent media sources on the web or on community radio probably heard that three journalists from the national program Democracy Now! Were arrested on Monday, September 1st. Sharif Abdel Kudus and Nicole Salazar were both arrested. And then host Amy Goodman herself was arrested when she challenged police and asked for the other two journalists to be released as well. An Associated Press photographer was arrested. And you can find out way more about that incident and many of these other incidents at the Democracy Now! Website, democracynow.org. Way more than I could possibly cover. They've been doing great coverage. And at the website, if you're not already a regular listener, you can go and listen to the shows, you can watch video clips, and you can even read transcripts. And that will give you a good sense of what's happened there in Minneapolis and St. Paul in the police response to protests, but also suppression of journalists trying to cover what's really going on. But I have to say that in watching this, I am a little bit torn. And I'm not torn about the journalists. The journalists had every right to be there, every right to be covering things, and should not be arrested or otherwise harassed by police. It's an absolute violation of freedom of the press and of freedom of speech. I am a little torn about all the effort that goes into the protests that are going on there. And that is because, at this point, the Republican National Convention is basically a pre-scripted affair. Nothing is happening inside those halls, at least especially not on stage, and hasn't already been determined and isn't already known. There are no surprises happening there. And certainly at protests that go on around the WTO, the IMF, there are real and I think absolutely vital calls for there to be more openness and for there to be a place at the table for more people, especially people who are more dispossessed and disempowered under current system. But there is no place at the table for just about anybody at the RNC. And while certainly one could shut it down, and I can see the arguments for that, I guess I have a pragmatic question, truly, an effectiveness question about all the efforts and all the energy being poured in to these protests, especially when it becomes very obvious that they'll be meeting immense police resistance and a police force that apparently is empowered to act with very few constraints and very little consequence. And we saw this go down 4 years ago in 2004 at the Republican National Convention in New York City. We saw an amazing police reaction, repression. We saw people routed up. We saw people, you know, basically stored at a bus depot. And many of those arrests have been dismissed, and many more are still going through the system, and there are lawsuits still underway 4 years later about the repression that happened on the streets. And there really was no, that we can tell, any real punishment, any real consequence to befall the New York City government, the New York City police force, or the Republican National Committee as a result. They seem to have been able to proceed with indemnity. And while I understand and absolutely support the role of protest and the role of civil disobedience and the need to be able to take to the streets and to truly communicate in the most direct way possible, I also wonder whether or not this is having an effect of the type that that people want it to. Whether it is able to truly affect people and change minds, or whether this is turned into simply a ritual of throwing up all sorts of civil disobedience and tempting the police to come and daring them to come and react with increasingly stronger and stronger reactions. And this is not me saying that there shouldn't be protests in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and yet so many people go there, and so many independent journalists, so many activists, so many people who do great work go there. And I wonder if all that energy being poured into Minneapolis, St. Paul right now for these protests is being used well. And I think it's a conversation and it's a question I ask, and not a declaration that I'm making. And I must emphasize that for all of that, it does not justify the type of police response that is happening. No matter how many broken windows there might be, it does not justify the arresting of innocent journalists, and it does not justify the sorts of rounding up of hundreds and hundreds of people and the mass arrests that are going on right now. And that brings me to a close of this edition of Media Geek. I will be back in one more week with more news and views of our media environment. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.